Please turn in your Bibles to Esther chapter 8. Esther chapter 8. I want to read Esther chapter 8, 9 and 10 today and bring this series to conclusion. So it is a long reading. Esther chapter 8. Let's hear the word of God. On that day, King Ahasuerus gave to the Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther told him what he was to her. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Then Esther spoke again to the king. She fell at his feet and wept and pleaded with him to avert the evil plan of Haman the Agite, and the plot that he had devised against the Jews. When the king held out the golden scepter to Esther, Esther rose and stood before the king. And she said, "If it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and if the thing seems right before the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes, let an order be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman the Agite, the son of Hammedatha, which he wrote to destroy the Jews who are all in the provinces of the king. For how can I bear to see the calamity that is coming to my people? Or how can I bear to see the destruction of my kindred?" Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther and to Mordecai the Jew, "Behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they have hanged him on the gallows because he intended to lay hands on the Jews. But you may write as you please with regard to the Jews in the name of the king, and seal it with the king's ring. For an edict written in the name of the king and sealed with the king's ring cannot be revoked." The king's scribes were summoned at that time. In the third month, which is the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day, and an edict was written according to all that Mordecai commanded concerning the Jews, the satraps, the governors, and the officials of the provinces from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces, to each province in its own script, and to each people in its own language, and also to the Jews in their script and their language. And he wrote in the name of King Ahasuerus, and sealed it with the king's signet ring. Then he sent the letters by mounted couriers, riding on swift horses that were used in the king's service, bred from the royal stud, saying that the king allowed the Jews who were in every city to gather and defend their lives, to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate any armed force of any people or province that might attack them, children and women included, and to plunder their goods. On one day throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, a copy of what was written was to be issued to a decree, as a decree in every province, being publicly displayed to all peoples, and the Jews were to be ready on that day to take vengeance on their enemies. So the couriers mounted on their swift horses that were used in the king's service, rode out hurriedly, urged by the king's command, and the decree was issued in Susa, the citadel. Then Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal robes of blue and white, with a great golden crown, and a robe of fine linen and purple, and the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honour. And in every province and in every city, wherever the king's command and his edict reached, there was gladness and joy among the Jews, a feast and a holiday. And many from the peoples of the country declared themselves Jew, for fear of the Jews had fallen on them. Now in the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, on the 13th day of the same, when the king's command and edict were about to be carried out, on the very day when the enemies of the Jews hoped to gain the mastery over them, the reverse occurred. The Jews gained mastery over those who hated them. The Jews gathered in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who sought their harm. And no one could stand against them, for the fear of them had fallen on all peoples. All the officials of the provinces and the satraps and the governors and the royal agents also helped the Jews, for the fear of Mordecai had fallen on them. For Mordecai was great in the king's house, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces, for the man Mordecai grew more and more powerful. The Jews struck all their enemies with the sword, killing them and destroying them, and did as they pleased to those who hated them. In Susa, the citadel itself, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men, and also killed Parhasadath and Dalphon, and Asapath, and Parothath, and Adela, and Aridath, and Parsmetha, and Isris, and Arad, and Vista, the 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hamadatha, the enemy of the Jews, but they laid no hand on the plunder. That very day the number of those killed in Susa, the citadel, was reported to the king. And the king said to Queen Esther, "In Susa, the citadel, the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men and the 10 sons of Haman. What then have they done in the rest of the king's province? Now what is your wish? It shall be granted. And what further is your request? It shall be fulfilled." And Esther said, "If it please the king, let the Jews who are in Susa be allowed tomorrow also to do according to this day's edict, and let the 10 sons of Haman be hanged in the gallows." So the king commanded this to be done. A decree was issued in Susa, and the 10 sons of Haman were hanged. The Jews who were in Susa gathered also on the 14th day of the month of Adar and killed 300 men in Susa, but they laid no hands on the plunder. Now the rest of the Jews who were in the king's provinces also gathered to defend their lives and got relief from their enemies and killed 75,000 of those who hated them. But they laid no hands on the plunder. This was on the 13th day of the month of Adar. And on the 14th day they rested and made the way that day a feast day of feasting and gladness. But the Jews who were in Susa gathered on the 13th day and on the 14th day and rest on the 15th day, making that a day of fasting and gladness. Therefore the Jews of the villages who live in the rural towns hold the 14th day of the month, this month of Adar, as a day for gladness and feasting, as a day of holiday, and as a day on which they send their gifts of food to one another. And Mordecai recorded these things and sent letters to all the Jews who were all in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, both new, near and far, obliging them to keep the 14th day of the month of Adar and also the 15th day of the same year by year, as the days on which the Jews got relief from the enemies and as the month that had been returned from them from sorrow into gladness and from mourning into a holiday, that they should make them days of feasting and gladness, days for sending gifts of food to one another and gifts to the poor. So the Jews accepted what they had started to do and what Mordecai had written to them. For Haman the Agag, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them and had cast pur, that is, cast lots to crush and destroy them. But when it came before the king, he gave orders in writing this evil plan which he had devised against the Jews should return on his own head, and that he and his sons should be hanged in the gallows. Therefore they called these days Purim, after the term pur. Therefore, because of all that was written in this letter, and of what they had faced in this matter, and of what had happened to them, the Jews firmly bound themselves and their offspring and all who joined them, that without fail they would keep these 2 days according to what was written and at the time appointed every year, that these days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation, every clan, province and city, and that these days of Purim should never fall into disuse among the Jews, nor should the commemoration of these days cease among their descendants. Then Queen Esther, the daughter of Abihail, and Mordecai the Jew gave full written authority confirming the second letter about Purim. Letters were sent to all the Jews, to the 127 provinces of the king of Ahasuerus, and the words of peace and truth, that these days of Purim should be observed as their appointed seasons, as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther bound them, and as they had bound themselves and their offspring with regard to their feasts and their lamenting. The command of Queen Esther confirmed these practices of Purim, and it was recorded in writing. King Ahasuerus imposed tax on the land and on the coastlands of the sea, and all the acts of his power and might, and the full account of the high honour of Mordecai to what the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Ahasuerus, and he was great among the Jews and popular with the multitude of his brothers, for he sought the welfare of his people and spoke peace to all his people. Why believe in God? Why trust in God and live in God and live for God? It's a question that we have to face at various times in our lives. It's a question probably which our young people face more regularly than those of us who are older. You live in a society like we live in, but you're at the brunt of the society. You're at the face of it. Those of us who are older can go to our work, and we meet two or three people, and they have accepted who they are, and they've come to accept who we are. But you as young people are in a situation where you're constantly being challenged by those around you to be like them, to walk in their way. And the idea of walking in the way of God is alien to them, and they don't want you to walk in the way of God because they don't want anyone in their presence who is alien to them. Why trust in God? Why believe in God? Why walk in the ways of God? Well, Esther, this letter that we've looked at over the preceding weeks, demonstrates that without God in our lives, we cannot succeed. We cannot succeed. We can live, but at the end of the day, we will be destroyed. We have read in this chapter, this portion that we've read today, about the hopeless situation in which God's people found themselves. We read in chapter 9 and verse 23 that this man Haman, who is by this stage dead, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them, and that he had set a date for their destruction, the 13th day of the 12th month, the day of Adar, and he had done so on the basis of the casting of a lot. We had read about that, and I preached on that in Esther chapter 3, how that Haman had decreed that all the people of God would be annihilated. Esther chapter 3, verse 13, letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces with instruction to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all Jews, young and old, women and children, in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their goods. A copy of that letter had been sent to all 127 provinces of the Persian Empire that stretched from India to Ethiopia. Hundreds of thousands of people's lives were under a death sentence. 11 months from this point, whole entire families would be wiped out. Fathers would be killed. Mothers would be killed. Teenagers would be killed. Sons and daughters would be killed. And just because this happens to be a sermon, and just because this happens to be Sunday and we're in church, that doesn't make any difference to the reality of what was going to happen. These people were actually going to die. They were actually going to die. People of God were going to be literally wiped off the face of the earth. Because of the laws of the Medes and the Persians, That matter could not be revoked. That edict for the destruction of the people of God could not be changed. It was written into the law. The king's signet ring had been placed upon it. The seal had been made. There was nothing that any human being could do to prevent the mass destruction, the genocide of the Jews. But we read that it didn't happen. We read that it did not happen. We read in chapter 9 how that what happened was actually that those who were going to destroy the Jews, they were killed. We read that 500 in Susa were killed, and throughout the 127 provinces, 75,000 people were killed. 75,000 people were killed in one single day. These people were the enemies of God. There were women, there were children, and there were men who were put to death. 75,000 human beings. How did that happen? What caused the turnaround? Well, we know because we have studied it together. One man, Mordecai, would not accept this situation. He was a man who was living in Susa at the citadel, and he was determined that he would do something that would save the people of God. It was an impossible and a hopeless task. What drove Mordecai to think that he had the ability or the strength to change the mind of the king and the prime minister, who was still alive at that time, the man called Haman, who despised Mordecai, who hated Mordecai? What gave Mordecai any sense that he could achieve anything in the face of the threat against the people of God? The only thing that facilitated Mordecai's desire to save his people was a knowledge. It was his knowledge. It's what he knew that enabled him to do what he did. Knowledge of what or who? It was his knowledge of God. It was Mordecai's knowledge of God that enabled him to muster within him the ability to act decisively in order to save the people of God. He spoke with the young woman whom he had raised, Esther, the young woman who was now on the throne beside King Ahasuerus. In chapter 4, verse 12, we read, Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, verse 13. Do you not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews? For if you keep silence at this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not come to this kingdom for such a time as this?" Faced with the absolute certainty of the annihilation of his people, faced with the reality that he had no power and no influence to change that certainty, Mordecai, knowing who God is, Mordecai, knowing of God's promises to keep his people, Mordecai acts and speaks to Esther, It is because of Mordecai's applied knowledge. It's because of Mordecai's genuine belief in God, that God is who he says he is, that faced with this situation, Mordecai acts not on the basis of how he feels, not on the basis of what he thinks, but on the basis of what he knows. What he knows. And it is because of Mordecai acting not on the basis of how he feels, or on the basis of what he thinks, or what he perceives maybe the situation, but because he acts on the basis of what he knows, even though that knowledge is flying in the face of what everything else is saying, even though his knowledge is taking him down a road that is in every way in opposition to what he sees and what he hears and what his heart is telling him in terms of the reality of the situation, even though he knows that it is at odds absolutely and completely with everything that's going on, he still acts in that way. And it is because Mordecai acts in that way that then he brings Esther into the equation. And Esther, like Mordecai, acts on the basis not of what she thinks or what she feels or what she sees or what she hears. Esther acts on the basis of what she knows. Because when Mordecai challenges her, chapter 4, Esther then calls him and calls her companions to have a feast day for 3 days. She goes to prayer and she seeks the face of God. Then she acts. She brings in Haman. She brings in the king. She invites them to a meal. They have the meal. She brings them back the next day. And having brought them back the next day, then she presents the case that Haman is the one who is going to destroy the people of God. Now that was easily said by me, but it wasn't easily done by her, because you remember that to go into the king's presence, you weren't allowed unless you were invited. She hadn't been with the king for a month. So there was an emotional separation between her and the king already. When she went into the king's presence, remember what she said, "If I perish, I perish." She was fully aware of the possibility that her life would end on that day when she would go into the king. She didn't go in there naively. She didn't go in there arrogantly. Nor did she go in there innocently. She went in aware of the reality of the situation in which she was placing her life. But she went in because of what she knew about God. What she knew about God was driving her in. What she knew about God was driving her to speak to her husband, King Ahasuerus. And when Haman is brought into that meal and he's sitting there and he is buoyant and he is full of himself and he is proud with all his achievements, then he is named as the man. And he is hanged. on the very gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. But Esther doesn't stop there. Esther, we read in chapter 8, then goes in again to the king. This time, she is not pleading for her own life. She is pleading for the lives of her people. And the tears flow because now she is intimately involved on behalf of her people. And as a result of her pleading with the king gives permission for Mordecai to write whatever he will in order to defend the Jews. She asked the king for a revoking of the law. He can't revoke the law. He's not in a position to revoke the law. The law of the Medes and Persians preclude the king from revoking any law that he has written. So what Mordecai is given permission to do is to tell the various peoples throughout the 127 provinces of the Jews that they are to defend themselves. And that's what they do. The horsemen are sent out. The riders and the dromedaries and the young camels are sent out. And everybody is made aware that on this 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, which is now 9 months from this date, there is going to be a defense made by the Jews against those who would attack them. And that happens. That defense is made. And we read how 75,000 are put to death, 500 in Susa. And there's another day given, an extension given so that the defense may continue on in Susa. The first day 500 are killed, the next day 300 are killed. And then we have this great feast, the Feast of Purim, which remembers this day when salvation was brought. And this word Purim is taken from the word pure, which is the casting of the lot, because that was the means by which Haman had decided this day for the annihilation of God's people. And this was to be a meal of remembrance. And the whole city is in joy. Susa is in joy, and all the people are in joy because of the salvation of the Jews. And God raises up Mordecai and raises him to a position of high honor. And I have only one simple point in my sermon today, my short sermon today. And that is that here is a man and here is a woman who acted on the basis not of how they felt or on the basis of the perceived reality around them. They acted on the basis of what they knew of God. If Mordecai had said to himself, well, the reality is there's nothing can be done, it wouldn't have been 75,000 enemies killed, it would have been hundreds of thousands of Jews who had been killed. If Mordecai had said to himself, there is no way in which I can influence the laws of the Medes and the Persians to provide for an escape for the Jews, if he had have rationally sat down and reasoned through the arguments, no one could have said to Mordecai at any point through this process, Mordecai, you're not being fair to the situation. The fair thing for Mordecai to have concluded was there was nothing he could do. The reasonable thing for Mordecai to have concluded was that his hands were tied. Who was he? He was a nobody. He was a nobody. He wasn't even of the Medes and the Persians. He was a Jew. He sat at the gate. He didn't have any influence. He didn't have any responsibility. He had no one who would look to him for advice. And the Prime Minister heeded him. Every time he looked at him, the Prime Minister despised him. Haman hated this man. So there was no avenue that he could go. Esther didn't have a hope. She was the queen, but she had kept secret the fact that she was a Jew because Mordecai had told her. The last queen who had exerted her will over the king, remember King Queen Vashti, she had been banished from his presence. She had lost everything in the opening chapter. She hadn't been in his presence for 30 days. She wasn't welcome. She knew the law which said, don't come in. She was going in to create a separation between the king Ahasuerus and Haman. Haman who had paid 10,000 gold talents, silver, whatever it was, in order to buy the death of the Jews. She was going in to drive a wedge between these two men who were in cahoots together. Everything that you, every way you look at this story, there is absolutely no hope for the Jews. There is nothing Mordecai can do. There's nothing that Esther can do. And yet they cling on to this one thing. God is real. And God is going to act. That's it. God is real. And God is going to act. That's it. There's nothing more. There's nothing more that they're holding on to. God is real. And God is going to act. And God is real, and God does act. God hears the fasting of Esther and the people. He puts the king a night's rest where he cannot sleep. The chronicles are brought out. Mordecai's previous intervention that saved King Ahasuerus is brought to the fore. Esther is welcomed in. Haman is put to death. A new edict is sent out, and the people of God are saved. Mordecai is risen, raised to a position of prominence in the land. Do you know, sometimes the Christian life is nothing more than believing that God is real and not thinking and not being driven by your emotions, but just saying, we are going to do because God is real. We're going to do because God is real. My emotions tell me I shouldn't do this. This doesn't make any sense. My feelings tell me differently. There doesn't seem to be any hope or any point. But you see, it's the people who latch on to the fact that God is real, and God has His plan, and God has His purpose, and God knows what that plan and that purpose is, regardless of the fact that we see very, very little of it, although we at times think we see it all. And it's the people who latch on to that and say, we are going to do this. It doesn't matter. We're going to do it. We're going to do it in the face of whatever odds, because God is real. We're going to do it no matter what anybody else thinks or says, because God is real. We are going to cling on to Jesus Christ. We're going to abide in His Word. We're going to abide in prayer. We're going to abide in love for Him. We're going to abide in love for each other. It doesn't matter how we feel. It doesn't matter what we think. It doesn't matter where we are emotionally. It doesn't matter where we are psychologically. We're going to hold on to the fact that Christ is real. We're going to hold on to the fact that we're going to read our Bibles. We're going to pray to Him. We're going to speak to Him. It doesn't matter what we think or what we say. It doesn't matter what we say in our prayers, as long as we're opening our hearts to Him and we're speaking to Him. It doesn't really matter even what we're reading, as long as we're reading what He wants us to read in His Word. We're going to hold on to Him. It doesn't matter really what we think of other people, who they are, what they do. We're going to love them because Christ has commanded them to love them. We're going to hold on to who Jesus Christ is. And let Him work it out. Let Him work out His eternal plans and purposes. Let Him address the issues in the lives of others. Let Him address the issues in our lives. We're going to hold on, because that's all that Mordecai and Esther did, was they held on with both hands to God, and they prayed, and they walked in the ways of God. You think about how this was changed. It was changed not in some big grandiose means. It was changed by a young woman who went in and made a meal for her husband. That was how it was changed. That was the sum total of all that happened. She went in and made a meal. She sat down and talked to her husband, the king. She made two meals, in fact. But it wasn't the making of the meal, even. It was just the fact that her heart was saying, I will cling on to the reality of God. And when the enemy comes and he wants to chip away and he wants to break and he wants to destroy and he wants to devour and he wants to break up, that's all we have. That's all we have. That's all we have is God is real, and I am going to cling on to God. The knowledge that God will do His work, He will protect His people, and He will raise up those whom He loves. Those who don't cling on to that simple fact, those who do not cling on to the reality of who God is, those who do not cling on to the simple things of reading and praying, those are the ones who founder. It is they who founder. It is those who cling on, who experience the joy and the salvation in the end. Amen.